You're listening to Live Free, Think Free on 90.1 KPFT Houston, your home for uncensored news and underground music since 2011. All right. Welcome to another episode of Live Free, Think Free. My name is Derek Bros, and I'm solo this week. We do this every week here on the Conscious Resistance Network, as well as 90.1 KPFT Houston in the Houston area, broadcast in Houston, Galveston, Huntsville, the whole Houston area. We've been doing that since 2011. So in addition to getting to stream this show to Odyssey, to Rockfin, to DLive, to Facebook and YouTube, we get to broadcast on one of the, I think, coolest radio stations that still exists in Houston. It's the only radio station in Houston that is commercial-free, corporate-free, community, actual community radio, which I think is pretty awesome. And there's not really many places like that really anywhere. Maybe you don't have one in your community. So even if you don't live in Houston and you're hearing this because you're listening through the internet, I want to encourage you to visit kpft.org, kpft.org, and consider making an investment and tell them it's in the name of Live Free, Think Free, formerly known as Free Thinker Radio, because that's what keeps us on air, broadcasting every Friday at 5 p.m. as people are driving home all around the Houston area. They get to hear myself and Micah and Johnny. And if you know this show and you know my work, then you know that people who tune in are going to hear things that they don't hear other places. And they definitely don't hear these things, you know, discussed on corporate radio, corporate TV. So for somebody in the Houston area, getting to hear alternative views, and I say that alternative, you know, I think it's the truth, but getting to hear these kinds of views when it comes to COVID-19 and just all the different topics that we cover, this might be the only opportunity. You know, some people aren't plugged in and they're not, you know, watching certain channels on YouTube or Odyssey. They don't know about BitChute. They don't know about Rockfin. They don't know about these alternatives, right? And so listening on the radio might be the only chance they get to be exposed to this information. So again, I just want to encourage you, if you support what I do, just me as an individual, Derek Bros and the Conscious Resistance, consider going to kpft.org and letting them know you like Live Free, Think Free. You want us to stay on the air. And that's my pitch for the show. There's a fun drive going on. Visit kpft.org to find out more about it. But yeah, we've got a lot to cover tonight. I'm solo. It's been a while since I've done a solo show. I usually just do my own broadcast. And every week this show is with Micah and Johnny. But I'm excited. We're going to share some music tonight. I've got a whole list of topics we're going to cover over the next 50 minutes or so here on Live Free, Think Free. So why don't we just go ahead and dive into it? The first one is, let's just start with like the big thing of the hour, right? Which is that in the last day, it has been made known to the American people that the U.S. government, the Biden administration, has now declared monkeypox an emergency outbreak. And this comes, a public health emergency, excuse me. And this comes after just last week, as we discussed on the show, the World Health Organization also saying that they believe that monkeypox is a illness of public health concern. I can't remember the exact phraseology, but that's essentially where we're at now, where we're on this slow buildup of, as we said as well last week, not just the World Health Organization, but cities like Houston saying, oh, we're having a vaccine shortage. People want, there's a demand for the monkeypox shot. And honestly, I don't know anybody who's, I haven't heard anybody talking about wanting to get a monkeypox shot. Maybe some people who've been watching too much corporate media have been, but I think it's just a false creation. Trying to create a false demand. Nonetheless, the United States government today announces that they're going to start making some moves to prepare for this alleged outbreak of monkeypox that they claim has infected more than 6,600 Americans. And they say that this new announcement by the Biden administration will free up money and other resources to fight the virus, which may cause fever, body aches, chills, fatigue, and pimple-like bumps on many parts of the body. They had Xavier Becerra, head of the Department of Health and Human Services, say we are, quote, prepared to take our response to the next level in addressing this virus, and we urge every American to take monkeypox seriously. I mean, I think without getting sucked into this whole conversation, I just want to say that for sure, if you're hearing this and you're listening to the Houston area especially, and you're, you know, seeing all the media tell you about monkeypox at the moment, that exercise a great deal of caution with buying into the fear porn, the paranoia, rushing out to get a shot. Just exercise some caution, my friends. Use your brains. And I can't help, and I'm going to continue to mention this every time we discuss monkeypox, because it's necessary. But I wrote this article a couple months back about this simulation that took place in 2021. Once again, an exercise preceding a real world event. And this one was done by the Nuclear Threat Initiative, Bill, Melinda Gates Foundation, John Hopkins, some of the usual players, some interesting people involved in this. And this simulation of a monkeypox outbreak that came just, you know, months ago, literally less than a year ago, it predicted a lot of what we're seeing now. And in this simulation, the most important thing to take away is that the people who ran it said that the way they should approach the, quote, next pandemic, if you even believe the thing we've been dealing with was a pandemic, is to exercise no regrets. So that means they're saying there should be, and this is their words, there should be lockdowns, there should be mask mandates, social distancing again for monkeypox, that the public health leaders should exercise no regrets. And what they mean by that is that they shouldn't be cautionary. And it's kind of funny to me, and maybe some of you out there, that they, the way they sort of interpret this or spin this is that the last 2 years of locking down society and shutting down businesses and masking on kids and all this kind of stuff was exercising caution. But that's what they believe. And so they're saying for the next quote unquote pandemic, there should be no regrets. And that's my fear, my friends, is that as this situation evolves, if these public health officials and the world, various international bodies follow the advice of the simulation that took place in November 2021 about monkeypox, then we should expect more lockdowns and things for sure. And you have to ask yourself, well, why wouldn't they follow the advice of these exercises? What would be the point of doing the exercises if they're not going to look to them for how they might handle real world events, right? Isn't that what they tell us? That's the reason they do them, is so that they can have some idea how to handle real world events. So even if you don't buy into this idea that the simulations preceding real world events are anything nefarious or to be concerned about, the fact is, if we take them on their word, then they're planning to operate with no regrets in response to this alleged outbreak that we are being told is happening right now. So let's go ahead and again, wherever you're watching, listening from right now, the Odyssey, Rockfin, DLive, I would love to hear your comments. And if you're hearing on the radio, you can always go to thehoustonfreethinkers.com. You can send us a message. We'll read your messages on air for our coming shows. But usually we start with the Houston news. We're going to get into the Houston news now, but I figured, look, we might as well just start with the big thing that was announced today. Yep, the U.S. government is saying monkeypox is a public health emergency, and they're going to be moving some money around and moving that those tax dollars, that your hard-earned money, moving it around to shift it in the area of dealing with monkeypox. All right, so let's get to some Houston news. This one is, I think, an interesting topic here because, again, most of these topics, whether you live in Houston or not, are relevant to your area because there's definitely some connection between things that happen in places like Houston, which is the fourth largest city in the country, and what might be happening in your community. So I want to share about this event that took place this past weekend, and this has happened in other cities as well. I know you guys have probably heard about this, where governments will do these gun buyback programs. And so these happen after school shootings, and they basically say, hey, we want to get these guns off the streets, so we're going to buy guns from you. And if you have guns you need to get rid of, we'll accept them, and we'll give you and really nothing for them. In the case of Houston, they're giving out the maximum I think you get was like $150 gift card or something for an AR. Like, that's not very good. But in the Houston case, they actually said it's no questions asked. So people could theoretically come in and turn in guns they've committed crimes with, and there'd be no questions asked. Now, the city was criticized by District Attorney Kim Ogg about that after the fact, and they're having some political debates. But basically, they said the cops are checking the guns, and you know, there still is some follow up. But I don't know. But either way, the city says that 845 firearms were distributed or were taken in, and they gave away more than $100,000 in gift cards, they claimed, this past Saturday, July 30th. The event began at 8, and it was supposed to end at noon, but it didn't stop till around 7 p.m. because people were just so eager, is what they're telling us, to turn in their guns. Dozens of vehicles were turned away due to demand and long lines. However, more than 150 people were given priority vouchers for a place in line at the next gun buyback, and they're going to announce a date soon. Sylvester Turner, the mayor, says the turnout demonstrates that there are too many guns on our streets and people want to get them out of their possession. The gun buyback is not only the solution, but we can and will make streets safer and help reduce gun violence. So what do you guys think about this, wherever you're watching from? Have you seen these? I'm showing pictures online on screen for those who are watching of this situation. But have you seen this happen in your community? And here's another interesting component. I found this story. Man claims to have sold dozens of ghost guns at Houston gun buyback event. So let's check out this part. Houston leaders say they will no longer accept 3D printed firearms known as ghost guns at future gun buyback events. We're going to exclude those next time around. This is a program designed for people who want to voluntarily relinquish their guns. So it's like, I guess they're saying somebody just went and made a bunch of 3D printed guns and then got some gift cards. City officials, you know, they held the gun. And again, so excuse me, I made a mistake earlier. The most you could get was $200 in gift cards, but it was $50 for like a handgun. Yeah, $50 for a non-functioning gun, $100 for a shotgun or a rifle, $150 for a handgun, and $200 for an AR. Well, the local Fox station says they found the man who claimed to have exchanged his homemade 3D printed guns. And he said he wanted to stay anonymous, but the goal was not personal profit, but to send a message to leaders about spending $1 million tax dollars on something that had no effect, evidence of any effect on crime. And then the mayor said, you'll always have some people who try and take advantage of the programs. I was there when that person brought in those guns. The reason we went ahead and did that was we had not said we were going to, because basically they're like, oh, well, I guess we didn't say no plastic 3D printed guns. So they took them. There are some folks who don't want any guns removed. Well, I don't want any more children dying. The anonymous man said he showed a receipt of the exchange, and he said each gun cost him about $3 to make, and he exchanged 62 3D printed guns and was given $50 per firearm. That's not bad. Like, this dude just made a pretty good profit. So that's interesting, because it does bring in the ghost guns conversation into the overall conversation about this, which I think is important, because people, for those of you who aren't aware of ghost guns or really familiar with 3D printing, you know, the way it works is you can literally use this machine that looks like a giant printer. I mean, there's different ones, but you're printing 3D ink, plastic filament, essentially, and you can create different things, including guns and guns that work, guns that fire, that do shoot. I've interviewed Cody Wilson over the years, who had with Defense Distributed, based in Austin, Texas, and went to their warehouse and, you know, got to see how the whole thing works. And the U.S. government has been increasingly coming after ghost guns and this idea that they should be criminalized in some way. So it's interesting to see the ghost guns factor into this conversation here in Houston with this gun buyback program. But what do you guys think about that? Have you seen anything like that? I do want to shout out to the Freedom Cell, Houston Freedom Cell activists who went out there. From what I know, they went out there not to protest, but I believe they did go hold signs and say, don't give your guns to the government and, you know, protect your Second Amendment, and maybe try to talk to some people and have a conversation. And I think that's valuable, and that can be important, because I've seen these situations take place where actually people will show up. Like, let's say the government, they got their table set up, right? And they're buying back guns. Well, you set up a table 10 feet away, or, you know, however close you can get, and say, hey, we'll give you $200 for your guns, right? Like, give the people a better deal for the guns. Plus, you're going to be able to get a good deal on something that they're ready to sell anyways, right? Like, so you could maybe get, because think about this, the people might be selling guns that are worth a lot more than a $200 gift card, but maybe they're like, you know, after all these school shootings, I'm done. I don't want this gun anymore. I'm taking it and I'm giving it to the government. So they're ready to let go of it anyway. So if you make them a good deal, better than what they're being offered for this gift card, then maybe you become the proud owner of a new firearm to protect your family and your community. Now, of course, that does present the question, the concern about whether or not people would be coming to sell guns that do have a shady history. But my guess would be that most criminals who are trying to get rid of a gun aren't going to say, you know what I'll do? I'll go sell it to the city and try to get a $200 gift card for it. Maybe somebody's that dumb, but it wouldn't be my first choice if I was in that situation. Nonetheless, it's interesting to see this conversation evolving, because this is where things are going to go. And thank you for those who are commenting in that. I think it is a brilliant idea to just literally set up next to them. And I've seen people do this in Austin probably a decade ago, years ago, people were doing this when the government first started doing that. So that's an idea. And maybe that doesn't work for all of you. Maybe some of you are happy that they're taking guns off the streets. But I think that also the anonymous man doing the 3D printing does present a important point. We can have the government, the city government say, oh, well, this is going to help with crime by buying guns from people. But it's one thing to say something, it's a whole nother to actually present evidence that what you're saying is factual and will happen indeed. And I don't think they've done that. So I think that's an important point. And I'm glad that this anonymous person who went out there and made themselves a nice profit by selling 3D printed guns brought that conversation up. All right, guys, let's continue on our next story. We got one more Houston story before we're going to talk some national news. I don't know if you guys saw today, but a jury ruled against Alex Jones or on Thursday, and we're going to talk about that. Also, Donald Trump came back and spoke in D.C. for the first time since leaving the White House. And I hate talking about Trump. I hate talking about mainstream politics, but I think there is some important points that I want to mention about what he said for those of you who might still have faith in Trump for whatever sad reason. But before we get to there, let's continue with this next Houston story. Again, you're listening to Live Free, Think Free. We do this every Friday on 90.1 KPFT Houston. You can visit kpft.org and make an investment in community radio to keep us on the air, to make sure that the people of Houston and the surrounding area actually get real, accurate, truthful news, not just corporate, nationally syndicated garbage. All right, in this story, we're going to focus on this new program that has been announced in the Houston area, Harris County. For those who don't know, Harris County is the county that Houston lives in, is inside of, and it's the second largest county in the United States. So it's a pretty big area with 4, 5, 6 million people probably in the larger area. So the Harris County Sheriff's Office announces they are launching a surveillance sharing program to combat crime. They're saying that participation in the SafeCam program is free and voluntary, as things typically start, and that participants will not be required to provide requested camera footage. But the setup raises questions about privacy and information control, according to two different privacy advocacy groups. And this is coming from Houston Public Media doing this report. This came out just in the last week or so. And if you're not familiar with these kind of programs, this is something we've seen popping up more recently in the last couple of years. For example, we've seen things like voluntary programs where the cops say, hey, give us access. I think they even do this in Houston. Give us access to your Ring doorbell cameras or whatever, you know, your outdoor, your smart house cameras and all that stuff. It's voluntary. It's a totally voluntary consensual program. But by doing so, you know, you're helping the cops. And no, what you're really doing is you're building the panopticon. Like if your neighbors are volunteering, giving the cops access to their Ring doorbell camera, that means they can see at your door, you know, your front door right from across the street. And this is not a good thing. So people need to rethink this. And these things, again, they might start out voluntary, but with time, they could become mandatory. And as the people point out in this particular article with this program, they claim that you're not going to be required to give the camera footage. But as one of the gentlemen interviewed here says, like, do you think, like, what do you think the cops are going to do if they come to you and say, hey, we need your footage because, you know, for whatever reason, a crime was committed or whatever they say, right? And they say it's voluntary, right? And that you don't have to hand it over. And you're like, no, thank you. Actually, I think I'd rather not. Well, as this gentleman here points out, this is Greg Noem, senior counsel for Washington-based privacy rights nonprofit called Center for Democracy and Technology. He said to Houston Public Media, don't believe for a minute that if you say no to the polite request for a video footage of what may be a crime, that the law enforcement will say okay and go back to its office. They will come back with a subpoena or a warrant to compel the disclosure of the information that they need for investigation. Don't believe for a minute that you have control over this. So I think that's a very important point here. And I also want to make a note, let me see if it's in this article, that the city of Houston, so obviously the city and the county are separate, but when you put the two things together with the city of Houston, the city government ran by Sylvester Turner, and the county with the county commission with Lena Hidalgo and the Harris County Sheriff's Office, like there's a lot of surveillance state stuff going on, guys. Just in the last year, the city of Houston has announced through their One Safe Houston program that they're going to start requiring certain businesses to install cameras on their property and that they have to do this or face $500 fines a day. And if they don't hand over the footage, again, they'll face fines. So again, like the program we're talking about now, it might be voluntary, but who knows how long before people are getting fined for not handing over footage. So you got things like that going on. You got the spot shotters being installed, the ShotSpotter, I think. Yeah, ShotSpotter program, these devices that have been around for a decade now. I've been warning people about them for at least a decade, but they're getting installed in a lot of the cities, especially the smart cities, where they put these things inside the lights or in different places and just sometimes towers and different places outside courthouses. I've seen cases like that. And they claim that it only activates when there's a loud bang, you know, like a gunshot. It's a gunshot detector. And they'll, okay, it'll start recording. So the cops, hey, a gunshot goes off in this neighborhood. We can get there quick and solve the crime. That's the best case scenario, you know, that you can hope for. Obviously, that's not always going to be the case. But what we found out in subsequent court cases since this whole thing began, when ShotSpotter started being used, is that those things are recording all the time. There's at least one or two cases that I know of, and there's probably more. This is years ago that I was researching this, that show that these devices were installed, in one case, near a courthouse, and that people's private conversations outside of the courthouse were being recorded, and in some cases, potentially used against them. So don't be silly enough, my friends, Houstonians or otherwise, because again, whether you live in Houston or in Harris County in that last story, go ahead and look up this program, voluntary camera sharing programs, and you might have something similar in your area, especially if you live near any major city. This is something that you might want to pay attention to. So I just thought that was worth sharing with you guys and getting out there. And if you're in Houston and you're aware of this, guys, just don't take it from me, the guy ranting on the radio. Go look it up. Go look up pri from privacy experts and from digital rights experts and people who are much more, I guess, credentialed and experienced and really do have the expertise in this area. Because I'm just relaying the information. But people have been warning about this for a long time. And you're creating the surveillance state for your neighbors and for your communities by participating in these so-called voluntary programs. But all right, guys, we're going to take a quick music break here on Live Free, Think Free, and we'll be right back. We're going to continue our conversation talking about Alex Jones, Donald Trump. What else do we got coming up? We're going to talk about digital IDs, more digital IDs rolling out in different parts of the world. We're going to talk about, as the title today's show is, no, you can't just trust the science. And why can't you just simply trust the science, right? Because we're told that there's this anti-science insanity growing across the United States. But is it really that people are being perhaps skeptical of the influence of things like big pharma and other corporations? I think that's what's going on. But we're going to dissect all that and more in the next 35 minutes or so. So please stay tuned with me. We're going to go ahead to Total Chaos, Complete Control. We'll be right back, guys. You're listening to Live Free, Think Free on 90.1 KPFT Houston.
Complete control. Oh, don't you know? 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 Complete control. Oh, no time to be wasted hanging around you. I got better things to shoot for in. Do. Oh, can't you see I've got it? I know what to do. I turn around, knock down, and put a bridge of goo. I want control. I've got to get control. No request, actually, I want complete control. I want control. I've got to get control. No request, actually, I want complete control. Changes will be made to keep control good. I'll change the whole world and everything around you. And I don't need no help or nothing from you. I know that then I want to know it will be true. I want control. I've got to get control. No regrets, actually, I want to be control. I want control. I've got to get control. No regrets, actually, I want to be control.
All right, welcome back to Live Free, Think Free on 90.1 KPFT Houston and the Conscious Resistance Network. If you guys are ever curious about where this show started, where it came from, or want to see our archives, you can check us out at thehoustonfreethinkers.com, thehoustonfreethinkers.com. Let's continue on, guys. Like I said, we're going to talk a little bit about Donald Trump, one of my least favorite topics. But, you know, it's interesting because we broadcast on KPFT, and KPFT is by and large a quote-unquote progressive radio station. I think that sometimes our show might stand out like a sore thumb, although plenty of people seem to be thankful that we are on KPFT and bringing a different perspective that is similar but different. And so many of the audience in KPFT might be like, yeah, of course, Donald Trump, we hate him. You know, they get it already, right? Some of you out there maybe are still holding on to this idea that Trump is somehow indicative or means something to do with freedom or you know, is here to save the day and all these kinds of things. You're, unfortunately, friends, very deluded, just as deluded as the people who believe Biden is somehow going to solve things, right? And I say that with kindness and compassion and love, I swear. But if you need a reminder of why Donald Trump is not somebody that cares about freedom and liberty and justice and all these kinds of things and just likes to pay lip service, let's look no further than his recent speech given just a week ago at his first speech coming back to DC since leaving the White House. And he was speaking at the America First Policy Institute two-day summit, which is all about promoting America First, Trump's, you know, agenda and whatnot. So he says a bunch of different things, but there's a few things I want to focus on here. When Trump starts talking about crime, he really tends to show his authoritarian streak. And this is something that, you know, anybody who paid attention before in the way Trump handled things, look, you don't have to support Black Lives Matter. You don't have to support the protests or the riots that happened in 2020 or 2021 or whatever. But the fact of the matter is Trump is an authoritarian and handles things like an authoritarian. He wants to smash the people, send in the guards. Do you remember that there was times over the last during the Trump administration where there was unmarked, unidentified government agents like in full riot gear taking people off the streets? In Oregon and other places. I mean, this was being reported and it never got really investigated or revealed what the heck that was about or what agency they're with or anything like that. And I guarantee you, if that had happened during Biden's administration or Obama's or anybody from the Democrats or the left, people would be flipping their wig as they should. But then Trump does it and people are like, well, I don't know. Maybe they should have done that. Stop being inconsistent. Okay. I don't want to go too much on a rant. I want to focus on the news here, but let's just look at what Trump said himself and tell me if this sounds like somebody who cares about freedom. Now, I'm not saying we should do nothing about the homelessness or the crime or the drugs or anything like that, but maybe not channeling and calling and praising the Chinese president who is the head of an authoritarian technocratic regime. Maybe that would be a good thing. But no, Donald Trump said the following. The dangerously deranged roam our streets with impunity. We are living in such a different country for one primary reason. There is no longer respect for the law, and there certainly is no order. Our country is now a cesspool of crime. Now, look, I get that. Places like especially some of the Democratic blue cities have seen a spike in crime, according to some people, some numbers, and some equate this to the various policies of trying to defund the police or, you know, bail reform and different things that in some cases haven't worked. I mean, there's been clear examples in cases, even in Houston, of people being let off, people, violent criminals, and they're saying, well, we're going to let you off with a, you know, a bond, and they go out and murder somebody else or kill somebody. I mean, that's clearly a problem, right? So there's like typically with some of the things Trump talks about, there's a seed or a kernel of truth and something that should be addressed. But then he wants to come and just smash it with a hammer, and that's how he should handle it. Now, also, I don't know if I would say the U.S. is a cesspool of crime. I mean, you could say certain cities and certain neighborhoods, but what it does is this kind of thing plays well for scared old conservatives who watch Fox News and One America News and those kind of places and don't ever leave their houses. And they're just looking out the window like, oh, my God, the world's going to hell in a handbasket. And they believe these kinds of things. Anyways, Trump goes on and praises Chinese President Xi. Jinping. And for those who are like, Derek, you're reading a CNN article. That's fake news. We're about to show you Trump in his own words. We're getting there. Trump said that, you know, he wishes he could handle drug dealers the way that the Chinese president did. And he tells a story about how they would have quick trials in China and that people would be sentenced within 2 hours. Doesn't sound great. You know, just removing the whole trial by jury of your peers and, you know, innocent until proven guilty. No, just 2-hour trials. And Trump is saying, oh, dang it. I wish we were more like China. Here's his quote. It sounds horrible, doesn't it? But those are the ones that don't have any problem. It doesn't take 15 years in court. It goes quickly, he says, before he endorsed a, quote, very strong death penalty for people who sell drugs. So, and that's not the first time Trump said that. But again, somebody who's out there calling for death penalty, this is like the insanity, the psychopath who is the president of the Philippines, Duterte, or however you pronounce his name, who's also said that drug dealers should be put to death. Now, look, I'm a former drug addict myself. I've seen a lot of damage, lost family members, friends to drugs. I get it. I understand the problem that exists. But throwing people in cages and killing people isn't going to fix the deeper root issue. Anybody who thinks that is just too stupid to come up with a better solution. That's the least – let's just kill him, right? How creative is that? You know, let's – regardless of whether that's going to work, it won't work. You think you can scare people out of bad behavior, but that's not how shit – it's not how it works. All right. So to combat crime, Trump also continued to argue that we need to deploy the National Guard. Here it is again, him being authoritarian. He said to go beyond the governor. And so imagine this. You have Trump saying – as a Republican, somebody, a conservative, which he's not, some, you know, people who usually care about states' rights, saying, quote, when governors refuse to protect the people, we need to bring what is necessary in anyway. The next president needs to send the National Guard to the most dangerous neighborhoods in Chicago until safety can be restored. Yeah, that's what we need. We need a bunch of police state going around. Just let's just use a crime in certain neighborhoods of the country as an excuse to initiate a police state. Does that, I mean, anybody who thinks this is going to turn out well is just not using their brain. And Trump goes on to talk about how we need to take all the homeless people out of the cities, which again, San Francisco, some of these places, increasingly in Houston, it's a big problem. But he called for, quote, creating thousands and thousands of high quality tents at the outer reaches of the cities and then bringing in medical professionals, psychologists, and psychiatrists. That is his least worst idea. That's what I'll say. That's the least worst thing he said. But everything else is like, hey, I'm an authoritarian. Let's kill drug dealers. And if the governors of Democratic states won't listen, well, we'll just send in the National Guard to force them to do what we want. And here's Trump giving this speech right here. You can even go to the point where the drug dealing is mentioned. I'm not sure it's going to play the audio, but all these links can be found at thehoustonfreethinkers.com. And you can find this talk from America's First Policy Institute on C-SPAN. Just go search cspan.org and you'll find it. So again, anybody who is still trying to pretend like Donald Trump cares about liberty, cares about freedom, cares about 9/11, cares about auditing the Federal Reserve, cares about any of the things he pretended to be to pay lip service to try to impress people while he was first running, I don't think you're really paying attention. And in fact, some people, unfortunately, have given up on their principles if they ever had them. And they believe instead, well, who cares? As long as it stops Joe Biden and the communists, then I don't really care. You know, Trump can be an authoritarian if he wants, as long as, you know, he goes after the people I don't like. That'll never be used against me. That's never happened, right? Supporting authoritarians just because they're against people I don't like never turns out bad in history, right? Aye, my friends. All right. You're listening to Live Free, Think Free, 90.1 KPFT Houston, The Conscious Resistance. We do this every week. Every week we broadcast and we share uncensored news and underground music. Well, let's continue this discussion. And this is sort of related because Alex Jones and Donald Trump are sort of the same breed to some degree. They definitely run in similar circles. And I'm not going to lie. Alex Jones played a role in my early, awakening to various issues in the world, and Endgame, his documentary, played a big part in that. I appreciate all of that. However, very quickly, I started to see the limits of Alex Jones's work and how he often acts very much like a clown. And even though he's the stereotypical conspiracy theorist, for example, even in a place like Houston where I live, whenever I ran for mayor, I've often been called the local Alex Jones. It's like people know his name well enough as this sort of archetypical conspiracy theorist. And anybody who seems to be different is like, oh, you sound like an Alex Jones, right? And he is one of the worst representatives for any sort of movement about truth and freedom. Sure, again, has he woken up a lot of people indirectly or directly? I can't take that away from him. But I do not trust him. I don't like his strategies. I don't like his level of communication. He has some good research, but he often gets a lot of things wrong. He did predict a lot of things and tell people way ahead of the game that the technocratic state was coming and all these things were coming. And he warned about this almost two decades ago, right? But at the same time, he goes on national TV and talked to Piers Morgan years ago and acts like a buffoon. He goes on Joe Rogan's show and when given this audience of millions of people to try to convey a message about the truth of what's going on, he acts like a fool, right? And again, to each their own. Be your person. Do what you want to do. But as far as, you know, being a representative of any kind of movement, horrible. Last person I would ever want to represent anything I have to do with. And InfoWars long ago gave up their true mission. The thing I liked about Alex Jones when I first heard about him was that he talked about pushing past the left-right paradigm, that the Democrats and the Republicans are no different. And that is the truth, that when you really start to study it and understand it, besides those wedge issues of abortion, immigration, and critical race theory, and some of these, you know, cultural issues, they always agree on war. They always agree on taking away rights. They always agree on more surveillance. They always, you know, there's these common grounds, and the machine marches forward, right? And Jones was one of the first people that helped me understand that. And then around 2016, 2015, he fell in love with Donald Trump and helped Donald Trump get elected. And as I pointed out over the last 4 years, his website, InfoWars, remains silent about many of the things that Donald Trump did, including what I was just sharing a moment ago. I'm sure they won't mention any of that. And basically just sold out all their principles as far as I'm concerned. So I do that long-winded introduction to give this latest news to you about Alex Jones, who has been facing several lawsuits for his work and his statements regarding the Sandy Hook situation. And this week he lost a case, another case. I think he already lost, but he was sentenced and is now being punished and is going to have to pay family members of the Sandy Hook kids up to $4 million. So, and in this case, I mean, this doesn't look good. The CNN article says family attorney exposes Alex Jones's dishonesty during brutal cross-examination. And they go through here just saying how several of the parents confronted him. And they also talk about, you know, they found Alex Jones' text messages and they're showing that he lied under oath and this and that. But Jones, he pretty much just backs down every time, you know, and I get it. Like you're facing lawsuits. They got you in court for the things you said, but why not be real? The truth is that there are many questions about Sandy Hook, and I'm not going to turn this show into a show about Sandy Hook, but anybody who studied that situation, you don't have to go as far as saying, you know, nobody died, which some people believe, and I'm not claiming that at all. I am not claiming that. Nobody take it that way. But there's so many questions about multiple shooters. I covered this when it first happened. You know, so many different things that don't add up about Adam Lanza's family's connections. Why did they destroy Adam Lanza's house? Why did they destroy the school? All these different things, right? And Jones instead just kind of cowers and says, oh, as they acknowledge here in one of his court cases, one of his testimonies, he said that he was under a form of psychosis, which caused him to believe that the event was staged. So he also makes people who are so-called conspiracy theorists, who are already labeled that, look even crazier by saying, oh, sorry, I was under psychosis, or, you know, I made something up, or I got confused. And then here's an even interesting part. They say that the judge that was in this case, Maya Guerra Gamble, the judge overseeing the case, that Alex apparently had done a video accusing her of being connected to pedophilia and human trafficking because she previously worked for the CPS, Child Protective Services. And they played that video in court, which is kind of funny. I wish I could see that moment. And most of the trial was recorded, so this should be out there if you want to watch 15 hours of trial of Alex Jones being a fool. But when they played this, the judge, she kind of laughed about it. And Jones, they were like, is this the judge you're talking about? And Jones was like, yeah. And so they're considering sanctioning him. But think about this. Look, maybe Jones did just make something up, which he tends to do, and say, oh, the judge here is, you know, associated with pedophiles and things like that. But again, there's a kernel of truth. If the judge worked for CPS, she might not have been directly tied to anything, but Alex misses a huge opportunity. And maybe you don't do this in court, but I'm just saying, this is like an example of how he works. It's like, here's an opportunity to take the truth and not just say random things and say, okay, look, maybe I exaggerate a little bit, but the CPS is connected to children being harmed, children being abused in foster homes. Like that's a fact. I mean, I've interviewed CPS whistleblowers more than 5, 6, 7, 8 years ago. Carlos Morales, you can look him up, who worked for the CPS and blew the whistle about all kinds of corruption that he witnessed. Right. So my point is that Jones, I don't know what to make of him, but he's the worst representative of anybody could ask for. And again, here he is being ordered to pay Sandy Hook parents more than $4 million. So now what this does, at least in my mind, is it effectively makes anybody who questions anything about Sandy Hook look like insane, you know, you look nuts, right? So if you have questions about Sandy Hook, which again, whether you were there or not, there are legitimate questions to ask about Sandy Hook. You don't necessarily have to go as far as Alex Jones did and take his particular belief, which he now claims he didn't believe. But you can still acknowledge that, hey, there was a man in a camo Sue caught leaving the school, going to the woods. And they later said, oh, never mind, that was some random thing. Yeah, that's kind of weird. The dude's got guns and he's dressed up. There was also initially reports of people seeing people dressed up as nurses running out of the school and jumping into a van. I don't know how many of you ever heard of that or know about that. You're definitely not going to hear that in the corporate media. But these things exist. These are out there. And so this is why I'm saying it should be legitimate and accepted to ask questions. And what Jones is participating in, whether voluntarily as some sort of, you know, agent or, you know, whatever, or because he's being pushed through this in court, it's not setting a good precedent for continuing to question narratives and to question, you know, what was going on. It was, so continue to question everything. And for those of you who don't believe it, because look, the thing is, well, I don't want to get into that. People think because they were at events, whether 9/11 or Sandy Hook, that means that they know everything about it and that they could have somehow witnessed everything. When there was a lot of different things being reported at Sandy Hook and elsewhere that many people documented and have still on the record, but it's very difficult to talk about these things because of the way they've treated this. That's why you can't find the documentary. We need to talk about Sandy Hook. Anyways, we spent too much time on this, but I hope you guys understand. And for those of you who trust Trump and trust Jones, maybe you'll think about that a little deeper. We've got about 15 minutes left here on Live Free, Think Free. And I do want to get to another song, before we wrap up tonight. But let's get to the question of the hour. The title of today's show is, No, We Can't Simply Trust the Science. And for anybody who might have caught my recent interview with Matthias Desmet of Ghent University in Belgium. He is the author of the book, The Psychology of Totalitarianism, which we played on this show just last week. You can find it on our archives at thehoustonfreethinkers.com, or you can find the full interview at theconsciousresistance.com. And in that interview, Matthias Desmet said that there is this problem, the reproducibility. Excuse me, I'm going to try to find this real quick. The ability to reproduce studies, that there have been numerous studies that have come out in the last couple of years and research showing that there's a lot of data out there, guys. There's a lot of claims of study says this, that can't even be replicated. They can't be reproduced, right? So somebody might get a study published, even in a quote unquote reputable journal that has all this history and credentials. And then later on, people go try to, you know, do the study again, which is what science is supposed to be able to do. Is somebody put something out there and they say, here's an experiment I ran, or here's some data I did. You should be able to go out there and do it. And if you do it, you know, in a legit way, you get the same results, right? Isn't that what science is supposed to be about? Instead, there's this huge problem where they can't reproduce scientific results in many cases. So this is coming from The Atlantic, who actually did a good article for once. It's called What an Alzheimer's Controversy Reveals About the Pressures of Academia. And it's basically focused on how a 2006 study by Sylvain Lesnay about Alzheimer's disease, which came out in 2006 and was published in Nature, discussed some specific – we don't need to get lost in the weeds of it, but it described some specific result about a molecule that they claim they found in rats. And the study has more than 2,300 citations in scientific literature, and it's inspired follow-up work and all kinds of articles about it. I mean, it's a pretty big study. But now a new paper came out and investigated, and it was described in Science just in the last week, and it identified numerous red flags indicating possible data fraud. And so they go into this history and say that actually a number of people have had questions about this. I mean, apparently this has kind of been like an open hidden secret in this sort of scientific field. They say that people had posted back as far back as 2008, that they couldn't come up with the same results. And other scientists said, quote, they tried but were unable to replicate the findings. And others said that they have always been skeptical of his work. And somebody else said that they'd long written off his supposed molecule he discovered as an artifact. Another person saying, we were skeptical about the data from the beginning. And on and on and on, right? So privately, they're all like, yeah, we don't really trust it. We don't really know about that. But then it's out there in nature for all kinds of people to find and to read and look, hey, look, this science says this, right? Here's the published paper, peer reviewed, et cetera. All the things we're told matter, right? You ever try to argue with anybody on social media about shots or fluoride or anything scientific? And they're like, oh yeah, show me your peer reviewed evidence, right? And they want to whip out some peer reviewed study from Nature or somewhere else that could have validity. But things like this call that into question. It's just like, okay, well, just because you found it on Nature doesn't necessarily mean it is what it claims. And that goes both ways, right? I mean, it could be a study that backs up some of your beliefs and says that certain shots are dangerous or that fluoride does cause IQ problems, as we know. And even that we should, you know, question, because we don't want to just question the things that go against what we believe and, you know, only believe the things that go in our favor. That's confirmation bias. We need to question that. We need to push past that. So another area, they say a 2013 anonymous poster on PubPeer, which is a forum for discussing flaws in published papers, pointed to a possible image manipulation in a study that had come out the year before. Later that year, a forum highlighted similar concerns in other papers. So, I mean, this has been going on for a while, and it's kind of like, again, it's crazy that these things are being talked about privately, but the public doesn't know anything about it. And now here's what I was talking about. This is what Matthias Desmet mentioned in our interview. He says that a 2021 analysis found that a dismally small proportion of the experiments described in cancer papers could be repeated. So think about that. There's all these papers alleging things about cancer, and they go out and do an analysis, and they look at a bunch of different papers and experiments claiming all kinds of different things, and they can't reproduce but a tiny portion of them. And even going back further to 2009, an analysis of multiple surveys in which scientists were asked about their own or others' misbehavior said that a significant portion of researchers, about one-third or one-fourth, say that they have observed colleagues engaging in, quote, at least one questionable research practice, such as ignoring an outlier without due cause. So, for example, ignoring something that's kind of like, and it's not the strongest case evidence, but maybe it's a piece of the equation, and they just sort of ignore it to draw their conclusion. And it says, when Elizabeth Bick, one of the investigators who's examining Lesnay's work on the Alzheimer's study, performed an audit of more than 20,000 papers from biomedical research journals, 20,000 papers, she and her colleagues found that 3.8% contained problematic figures bearing hallmarks of inappropriate image duplication or manipulation. So 3% is still a pretty good chunk. Now, that doesn't mean every single paper out there. But so in general, this article is a pretty good jumping off point for those of you out there, especially who might see these things and be like, dang it, why won't my crazy brother or uncle or friend or whatever just take the damn shots? You know, they think they're so smart, but they won't trust Fauci, right? And I got into a debate the other day back and forth briefly with someone on Twitter who's like, oh yeah, well, I'll take Fauci's degrees and, you know, years of working in science over some random person on Twitter. And it's like, I get it. Okay. You know, you've bought into the narrative that credentials next to somebody's name, degrees on the walls, things like that mean that you automatically know everything. Right. And look, I'm not trying to take away from anybody in their hard earned degree and time in school and things like that. I feel like I pretty much have equivalent already put myself through several college degrees with the amount of research and work that I do. And I take it seriously. So I try to question my own biases. I do try to make sure that I'm not just only focusing on the research and the topics and the things that I already agree with and that kind of stuff. But the reality is that it's difficult for all of us. So whether you're a scientist or just a lay person, we need to question our biases. We can't simply just believe that we've got it all figured out and that everybody else is just delusional and crazy and there's nothing to see here, right? All right, guys, we got time for one more song. I'm with you for about 10 minutes left on this show, Live Free, Think Free. We've been broadcasting since summer 2011. I got two more stories for you tonight. We're going to end talking about the big picture, the digital ID, where it's headed. I'm going to talk about the digital ID. Last week, we talked about how in Sri Lanka, they're rolling out digital IDs now. You can't get gas without a QR code. India, so many other places, the United States trying to roll out digital driver's licenses. And we're going to talk about virtual influencers. That's right. Your kids, you don't have to only worry about your kids being influenced by that crazy weirdo on Instagram that might lead them astray and get them into all kinds of woo-woo stuff or get them partying. I mean, just realistically, I know parents are worried about who their kids are being influenced by, and you should pay attention to that. But now there's virtual influencers. People who aren't even real might be influencing your kids. So check that out, guys. We'll be right back. Stay tuned, and we're going to enjoy this song real quick. This is The System from Beast 1333. We'll be right back. Live free, think free. Through the
Y'all told us about the twin towers wasn't even true. Ritualistic mass murder, deception, it ain't new. Cause the goal of the system is making a slave of you or the material. Things don't matter, they unfulfilling. What we really need to get to the root of what they concealing. They oppress us, suppress us, repress us like they possess us. Promise of progress and promise and changes when they address us in our faces. So blatant, surrounded by their symbology. They shape the whole system and cultural anthropology. So bet your last fuck that it sucks. Now successful success for my struggling people, the world stressful. The best thing that we can do is learn to think together. Since this rent for numbers, I suggest we interlink together. Cause our system that is brown, let us down. United snakes to state. Someone had to step up and say it's time to set them straight.
All right, welcome back to 90.1 KPFT Houston, the Conscious Resistance Network, Live Free, Think Free. And we got just a couple more minutes here, guys, with you. I want to wrap up. That was Beast 1333, The System. If you enjoyed that, check him out. Old school truth, conscious hip hop. So let's dive into this last two stories here. As I mentioned, the growth of digital IDs is just happening extremely fast, and it started before COVID, but COVID-1984 was the boost that kind of kicked it around the world. Here we go, Greece rolling out digital ID cards and digital driver's licenses. You can see them on screen, QR code there. Greek citizens can now create, store, and present digital versions of their national identity card and driver's license using a digital identity wallet on their smartphone. And I bet that digital identity wallet will soon hold a central bank digital currency. The Greek government has begun rolling out the gov.gr wallet for both Android and Apple devices, which lets citizens generate digital documents that can be used in Greece in the same way their physical ID card or driver's license can be used. And it incorporates a QR code to allow documents' authenticity to be verified. And the Greek Ministry of Digital Governance, I didn't even know they had such a thing, said, quote, after entering the application environment, the citizen can, with a few clicks, create and save the digital copy of his ID and or driver's license. And they go on to describe the process and, you know, how this is going to be used more and more for everyday life. And this is the world of the future, guys. This is something I've been warning out about for a while. I know many of you are increasingly concerned about it. I don't know what the perfect solution really is. These governments are trying to roll out these types of things around the world, and there's only so much that we can honestly do. I mean, I would say reject these systems as much as possible. Do not support them. Do not participate to whatever degree you can. Now, the more ingrained your life is into their system, the more difficult that's going to be for some of you, right? If you are totally ingrained into the system, you got a 401k, you got student debt, you got a bank account, you got all your money coming in through direct deposit into your bank account. Those are going to be difficult things, my friends. I'm not here to give you financial advice, but I think you should reconsider working with banks, at least work with credit unions. But I imagine credit unions will start going the way of digital identities soon enough as well. So it's going to involve really rethinking a lot of the way you do your life if you truly want to remain free from these all-pervasive digital systems that are very quickly growing, right? And there might not be any total way out of them, but if we're going to try to avoid them or at least reduce our interaction, then you need to rethink some of the things you do in your life. Now, our final topic of the night is these so-called virtual influencers. This is from CNN, Forever Young, Beautiful and Scandal-Free, The Rise of South Korea's Virtual Influencers. And for those of you who are watching on screen, this young woman that I'm showing on screen is a complete fake. This is a hologram. This is not a hologram, but it's a computer-generated artificial intelligence that doesn't exist. It's been fabricated. But this person has more than 130,000 followers on Instagram and posts pictures of them globe trotting around the world and singing and dancing. This is Rosie, a virtual influencer, a digital rendered human so realistic she's often mistaken for flesh and blood. You better believe some people are in love with her. You can see various photos here. And the pictures aren't just like, here's a still image of some AI-generated person. It's meant to look like she's out shopping. Here she is. This is supposedly her on Instagram visiting Singapore. Oh, just a nice night out in Singapore, having drinks with friends, and even post videos and stuff. It's meant to make you question what is real and what isn't. And this is what the larger issue of questioning human identity is all about, is moving towards transhumanism, not being able to tell fact from fiction. And again, you not only have to worry about your kids being influenced by the crazy rock stars out there and the people on the TV and the people on the Instagram, but now you got fake people trying to influence your kids, right? Because I saw some good comments when I posted this on social media earlier this week. People were saying things like, you know, this brings new meaning to the conversation around the fact that there's already kids who are suffering with trying to maintain a certain self-image based on what they see on social media. You know, they might see somebody, a real person who maybe has surgery or maybe had to take 30 minutes to get a perfect looking photo to, you know, look good in front of everybody. And the kids or somebody sees that and they're like, man, I could never be like that, right? And that's not necessarily the fault of the person posting it, but it's just part of social media. But now you've got literally a digitally created person, which, you know, it's supposed to be I don't even like calling it like a pretty person because it's not real, but it's meant to look like an attractive Asian young woman, right? But as I said, no makeup messed up, no drama, no, you know, so there's going to be some kids and people, especially Koreans, who might look and Koreans already have that kind of whole culture of obsession with perfection to some degree and chasing after these things. And there's, for example, I was learning that Korea already has one of the world's largest, kind of collection of reconstruction surgeons out there, because so many people are having those type of surgeries. So this, I could see this being very bad for a lot of people's self-esteem and their health. But that's where we're going to end it for tonight, guys. Thank you so much for tuning in. This has been Live Free, Think Free. Please leave your comments. Check us out every week. We do this on 90.1 KPFT Houston. Again, if you can support us, go to kpft.org, make a donation in the name of Live Free, Think Free. Tell them that you want to see us on the air for now and long into the future. Thank you guys so much. Until next time, remember, you're powerful, you're beautiful, and you're free. Peace.